Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Delighted that you're with us today. Now, we call this program Seek Reality because that's what we're coming to see we all have to do for ourselves, right? There's no existing authority that gives us most of the really important truths. So, for the most part, Seek Reality deals with the crucial information about this life and the next life that science and religions cannot or will not ever give to us. But occasionally on Seek Reality, we venture beyond scientific and spiritual issues, especially in areas that are important to me. Today's will be one such conversation. As some of you know, I have just retired from my 35-year legal career, but what I never have much talked about is the fact that I've been a certified financial planner for nearly as long as I've been a lawyer. I am, believe it or not, CFP number 812, and now there are hundreds of thousands of CFPs, but I kept up that credential to keep myself aware of current trends in retirement planning, mainly because a part of my job for the business owners who were my legal clients was helping them prepare for their independent retirements so they could pass the business reins to their next generation. Given that history, I'm appalled to know that nearly 80% of American workers now say they live paycheck to paycheck. Most of these people are also in debt, and this in a country where it can be hard for older people to even find a job. So what are those 80% going to do with them when their working lives end? They can't do any more work. I've wanted for a while to introduce this problem to our weekly conversations. I haven't had a good way to do it, though. But how can older people seek to grow spiritually and really make the most of this lifetime if they're worried about keeping food on the table? So I've asked a friend who was a retirement expert to help you better understand how you can balance the present and future needs of your physical life with your core need to grow spiritually. He's asked me to entitle our conversation, "Why Living a Spiritual Life Doesn't Mean We Can Ignore Our Worldly Needs," which I think just about sums it up. Roger Friedman is a chartered retirement planning counselor and managing director at Steward Partners Global Advisory in Bethesda, Maryland. He has had more than 30 years, as you can see, he's sort of in my age range, a little younger maybe, but he's had more than 30 years of experience providing a comprehensive wealth management, retirement planning, investment strategy implementation, and he leads a whole team that focuses on retirement accumulation and retirement income planning. So this is his field, and he's a friend of mine, so I can trust him to share with you what he knows. This is what we all need to at least be aware of, so I'm so glad Roger's here. Welcome, Roger. I'm delighted that you're with us today.
Thank you, Roberta. I'm delighted to be here, delighted to be your guest.
Roger and I have seen each other occasionally at various kinds of meetings, and we have lunch, and we laugh a lot. So we're going to try to stay sober and serious for you. Roger, tell us a little bit about your history. I mean, you have told me a little bit of this story, but you say your grandparents and your dad were the big influences that made you want to do this work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a New York City kid. I'm in my mid-60s. And when I was growing up, my grandparents, on my mom's side, had a paint store. And it was right next to their apartment where they lived for 50 years. And I remember sitting on my granddad's lap and seeing how hard he worked around the paint store. And, you know, I was the one that took the paint stirrer, the wooden stick that kind of looked like a ruler, and I just smacked everyone, you know, especially my brother and my sister, with the stick. But at the same time, I saw how hard my grandparents worked. And then on Thanksgiving Day in 1964, my grandpa was walking down the street to the house with the turkey in hand. He had a heart attack and he dropped dead in the street.
Oh.
And pandemonium ensued, and it was a day that I was 6 years old, but I'll never forget it. And I remember the aftermath of that, where my dad would write out a check every single week for my grandma, because she didn't have enough money to live on her own. She was unable to manage the paint store effectively by herself, and she had to close it. And Social Security did not provide an adequate safety net for them. And without my dad writing out a check for about $115 a week, my grandmother would have had to have moved out of the home that she was in for a half a century and move in with us and basically be a ward of my dad. And that had a really big effect on me. And I came away thinking that parents, you know, may have to rely on their kids, you know, in retirement, but they shouldn't have to.
No.
And that lesson stayed with me for many, many years. It stays with me till today.
Well, so that's what drives you, because you do seem kind of driven where this topic is concerned. And I can identify with that problem, because I usually have to talk business owners into their need to prepare separately for retirement, because they all think that the business is going to be their retirement. The only problem is they're not going to want to run it forever, and the kids are going to want their turn to build their own wealth. So
That's true.
I guess I'm a little bit obsessed about it too, but I'm so glad that at least you're here to talk to us about it today. Now you talk about the mindset of retirement success. That was one of your book's titles, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. It was something that kind of hit me over the head with a hammer time after time, and I figured it was high time to write about it, because unless somebody's mind was in the proper place, you could create a plan, you could have meetings, you could have phone calls, you could create strategies, and it's kind of like the dog ate my homework. And
yes,
they come in with excuses and excuses, and nothing gets done. And I'd scratch my head thinking, you paid us this money, we spent all this time and effort, you traveled, and you didn't lift a finger to do it because the dog ate your homework.
Right.
And finally I said, you know, I have to write about this, because unless their mindset is correct, it's not going to happen.
I had so much trouble very often, especially with younger business owners, that I would always make them buy the building that their business was in, or move to a building.
Great advice.
Because then they were paying rent to themselves, paying off their building, and when it was time for them to retire, even if they hadn't done anything else I suggested they do to prepare for retirement, they owned the building, they could collect rent from the kids, and everybody was happy. But sometimes that was all I could do. So how do you help people get the right mindset? And what is the right mindset?
But before I tell you that, you know, there's a lot of genius in what you're saying, because so many professionals and so many retail store owners think that they will be able to sell their business for X in the future, only to find out that that number is actually X minus 500,000, or even X minus a million. So the fact that they own the real estate where their store or professional practice is located gives them an extra big basket to rely upon. That's great thinking.
Well, the problem is that was often the only thing I could get them to do, and I saw it in the end make such a huge difference for people, because you're right. A business is not a fungible good. You cannot sell it for what everybody thinks it's worth unless the right buyer comes along. So we also made a practice usually of, if we didn't have kids that were going to step into the business, of inventing some. We'd hire young people and bring them along who wanted to own the business, so we raised our own. But that's the only sure way to sell a business. You can't assume someone on the street will even pay you anything for it. So what's that mindset, Roger? What's the retirement mindset that people need to have?
Well, you know, there are a number of things that go into it. I'm going to go over six or seven of them, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
And, well, you know, it's not going to be in any particular order. It's going to be short and sweet, but I just want you to get the flavor, okay? First of all, you need to understand the issues that you're going to face in retirement. Mostly everybody doesn't know what they are. And the big three issues or four, is number one, you have to manufacture a synthetic paycheck.
Right.
And the question is, well, how are you going to do that? You may be a great crane operator, you may be a great chiropractor, pharmacist, computer operator, but what do you know about crafting and creating a synthetic paycheck for maybe 30 years of a joint retirement?
Right.
So that's number one, okay? Number two is understanding that the three issues, I call them the three monsters under the bed, and you'll see why in a minute. The first monster is inflation, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
maintaining purchasing power over 10, 15, 20, 25, even 30 years is a Herculean task, because everyone remembers what a quart of milk used to cost, what a gallon of milk used to cost, what a Mustang used to cost. Everything used to cost a fraction of what it is now. Okay.
I
remember having a discussion with my dad when he was alive that cars now cost more than he paid for his house.
Which is true in many cases. That's exactly
Exactly.
Same with my parents, and they had a nice house at the time.
That's right. Now, the other two monsters under the bed, maintaining purchasing power, is healthcare expenses, which keep rising and rising, and potential long-term care expenses, which may be over and above any healthcare expenses you think of. And if your listeners are not familiar with the term long-term care, I want you to think home health care aides or even nursing homes. Because at some point in the future, Roberta, someone may be frail and not be able to do all these activities of daily living that they now do so easily. So those are the three monsters.
Yeah, and they are big ones.
They're big.
But the key, it seems to me, is to have pots of money that you are filling and putting aside, right? I mean, there's no one strategy, because those are different monsters. They'll hit different people in different ways.
Oh, absolutely, and each require a different strategy. So that's number one. That's the retirement issues you'll face. Number two is, are you willing to do what is necessary? This is mindset squared, okay? You know, a lot of people will just bury their head in the sand and hope everything works out. What I've learned is things really don't work out unless you have a plan or a strategy to guide them and help them work out. So that's number two.
Wow. Okay. What's number three?
Number three is visualize your ideal retirement. Okay, if you want to arrive at a certain destination, see that destination in your head. Is it a cabin in the mountains? Is it a condo overlooking the Gulf of Mexico? Is it the wild place in Texas that you want? Is it a waterfront property? Okay, there are certain things that you're going to want to see as part of your retirement. Maybe you want to be right close to your grandkids so that you could babysit for them. You can't get somewhere unless you have a map or a plan. Otherwise, it's kind of like the husband responding to the wife in the car, "Honey, we're not lost and I don't need a map."
Right.
And she's sure, sure. And you, that's right, and you understand that. So that's number three, visualizing your ideal retirement. What is it that you're hoping to achieve? Okay? Number four, I'm glad you asked, Roberta. Hold yourself accountable. Okay? You can't say, it's not my job, it's not my fault, someone else will take care of it. What you need to do is you got to go into the bathroom, look yourself in the mirror, and you're going to come face to face with the sole person responsible to make a financially independent retirement happen. No one else is looking back at you. You're the one. Okay? In some circumstances, you could rely on a certain amount of your spouse. Sometimes that's not feasible. But when you look in the mirror, you're coming face to face with the person who basically has sole responsibility to make this happen.
But there's a problem, and I always faced it. Repeatedly, I faced it. When you have a pile of money building somewhere, people think of it as money. And money has many uses today, which I would just love to, you know, have, be part of. We spend the first half of our life accumulating stuff and the second half getting rid of it. So when we're younger, it looks like money to us. So I used to tell my clients, it's not money. As soon as it goes into that account, it's like a refrigerator. You just can't spend it. I actually use that analogy. You can't spend it. It's useful. You're going to really be glad you had it later, but you just can't spend it. You'd be surprised how many, especially very young couples, would take that to heart. And I would hear people say in my office, but we can't touch the refrigerator. I just, you know, what do you say?
I love that. Well, it's kind of like, you know, I tell people, the more you spend, the less wealth you have.
Well, that's true.
If you want wealth, you have to curtail the spending, okay? Because it's like putting a hole with a pencil in a paper cup full of water, okay? And all the money is just going to flow out. All the wealth will be gone that you've been saving up to support your future retirement. And that takes us to, I'm sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, but Mr. Friedman, I need the money now. So what do you say to that? So I used to say to people who really had that kind of craving, we are buying something very important, and that's what that is. We're buying a future that you're going to love being in. So we have to put a little money aside for that, but we're just doing it in a very positive way. And anyway, it's a refrigerator. But the point is, I really found that we had to get people invested in what was going to, the fact that they didn't always want to work, and what was going to be fun about that next stage.
Although, it's a matter of setting priorities. You know, is it granite countertops or an IRA contribution?
Well, that's true. But do people say to you, "But I'm going to die young"? I don't want to say.
Do you know? Okay, I got a funny story for you, Roberta.
Okay.
About 20 years ago, during the Shearson part of my life, before Shearson was sold to Smith Barney, I had a client, and we arranged to have long-term care insurance for the wife, and he adamantly refused, saying, "I'm going to do a Kevorkian. Okay, I'm never going to live in a nursing home." And there was no rationalizing with him. That was his, you know, three-word response. I'm going Kevorkian, okay? And some years later, I found out from his wife that before he passed away, he actually bought it from a local agent because he was too embarrassed to come back to me because his wife said, "You're getting the long-term care or I'm out of here."
Oh, well.
Exactly. But, you know, there are priorities, okay?
That's right.
And that leads me to the fact.
In the positive priority, though, Roger, that's what struck me. They have to see it as something really positive.
Yeah, they
sorry,
have
what
to.
What were you going to say? As you can see, I love this. I love this topic.
That's okay. They just have to see a future that they want to be part of. And you don't want to live in a tenement in the future after working for 40 years. You want to live as you wish to live, okay? And you have to prepare for that. And that leads me to number 5, don't go it alone. Assemble a team. Because, you know, just as you were saying before, you know, you're a CFP and an attorney trained. However, if you were a dentist or you owned a gift store, or you were a physical therapist, what do you know about crafting a retirement accumulation plan that will give you the amount of assets you need for potentially a 30-year joint retirement between husband and wife? Okay,
That's a
skill set that's probably not in your toolbox. So you want to hire a team of people, and it sounds scary. However, hiring a financial planning professional, having a certified public accountant, these are two things that I think are very, very important because most people, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this, Roberta. Most people learned about money two places. Number one, they were at the top of the stairs hearing money arguments that mom or dad were having when they were 7 or 8 years old.
Right.
And what they heard, that money was scarce, money was hard to come by, and we never had enough of it. That's the first place they learned about money. The second place was they never learned it in school, but if they took some courses in college, odds are they heard it from an associate professor that makes $45,000 a year, that has $2,800 in their checking and $2,000 in their IRA. So they're learning about money and wealth from people that don't possess money and wealth. And that's a problem.
Now, some of the people listening are thinking, well, that's me. I don't have money. I don't have wealth. And the job I have is never going to make me a millionaire. So what do I do? Well, here's an example of something that those people can do. And this doesn't involve actually having anyone like Roger in your life quite yet. I have a cousin for various reasons, they moved every few years. They kept having children. Mm-hmm. They needed a bigger house. So they kept every house that they had ever owned. She ended up with, I think, 6 or 7 houses by the time they were retirement age. They had kept them. They rented them out. And what do you know? They lived just fine in retirement because one by one, they would sell those houses and they had money. So
that's great.
That's something almost anybody could do. You know, just don't turn the house in and get a different house. Keep the house as a rental property. Neither of them really ever made a lot of money in their lives, but they're living very well in retirement. That's one thing you can do. Well, what if you're an older person, Roger? I don't make a lot of money, and I just realized I'm 50, the big 5-0. What am I going to do now? What do you recommend if someone comes to you who's not wealthy and needs to get started late?
A lot of people I work with are not wealthy. Okay. I think of wealth when someone has 7 figures of investment and retirement assets.
That's right.
Although definitions of wealth are kind of like the weather. You know, if I'm in Texas and it's 65 degrees, it's cold. If it's 65 degrees here, it's warm. Okay.
Right.
It's anyone's guess. So the point is that if somebody is working and there is a employer sponsored retirement plan that they have the ability to be part of, maybe it's a 401k plan or a 403b plan, for example. Sometimes these plans, these employers, give matching contributions. In other words, if you put in 5% of your pay, they might match 5%, you know, from them. So you have literally 10% of your pay going in. You've doubled your money before it's invested, and they're giving you free money to participate in the plan.
Right.
And believe it or not, Roberta, there are people that say, oh, no, I can't afford that.
How could you not afford to do that?
Well, I really have a problem with that, because if you lay down a dollar and I promise to double that dollar and give you a dollar of mine, there's something there that's affordable. It's a matter of noodling it through and figuring out, well, maybe I don't need DirecTV or I don't need a new iPhone. But there's some way you could arrange your life to be able to live on 97 cents of every dollar or 95 cents of every dollar and eventually 85 cents of every dollar.
Yes.
Because it's always a struggle between current buying and future and saving for the future. It's always a balance, always a struggle.
You could also think in terms of what you don't spend is what you get to keep. Wouldn't you rather have than spend? I've had cases where I've had to, and this is, of course, years ago. I love talking about my past. I would have to basically walk people through their house and remark about things that they owned and they didn't care about anymore. And eventually say, you know, would you rather have the money that cost? Yes, they would. There's a point in our lives where we suddenly realize spending money doesn't make you happy. Being secure makes you a whole lot happier. People think you can't do it, but you can. You know what Albert Einstein said was the greatest miracle of all?
compound interest.
Yes, and everyone needs to know that. Now, Einstein knew a few things, right? But since he knew that, to me, that is about the most sensible thing anybody ever said. Starting early, you don't have to put as much away. But you're right. If you start late and you're creative, you can. I mean, you can buy a house and rent it out to people. What I love about doing real estate is it's a very sort of solid thing. You can't spend it. It really is like a refrigerator.
That's true. However, I will argue with you on something you said, my dear.
What?
You said that people want to be secure. The only people I know that are secure reside in federal penitentiaries.
Oh. Yeah, but
so I'm going to ask you, do you want to be secure, Roberta?
No, not in a penitentiary. but people, it may be illusory, Roger, but people want it all the same. They want to know that they have a dollar more. I mean, hearing that 80% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. That, for me, was a huge wake-up call. I decided we were going to talk. Roger and I decided months ago we would do this after I had retired. But it was a wake-up call when I started doing the research for it, because that is a terrible statistic.
Yeah, there's
that way.
And there's a statistic that drills down a little more that I'd like to share with you. Uh-huh. And I got this from my mentor, Dan Kennedy. He basically said that in any population, it's kind of like a pyramid. There's the top 1%, okay? And that might be a George Soros, it might be a Zuckerberg, it might be a guy from Microsoft or Trump or something like that. And then there's 4% below them, people that maybe have $10 million or $20 million, not billions, okay?
Right.
So that's the top 5%. Then there's another 5% under that, and those people maybe have 1 to 5 million, and they're very secure, as you like to say it, and they really don't have to worry, okay?
Yes.
Then there's another 10%. They're going to make it. They're going to be okay in retirement. You know, they can't buy a yacht, but you know they'll be okay. And then there's 80% that, as you say many times, are living paycheck to paycheck. And if they lost their job for 6 to 8 weeks, for example, and money wasn't coming in, they might lose their home or even worse.
Yes.
Okay. And all of these populations divide. You could have a room of 300 millionaires inside a conference room, and it still divides 1, 4, 5, 10, 80.
Really?
Yes.
Are you
it's
sure?
Amazing.
It's a little distressing. But the point
is distressing, and I don't like it, but I've seen it in play time and time again.
But it's up to each of us where we're going to be on that hierarchy.
Oh, absolutely. You have the ability to move at any part of that pyramid, and that goes back to mindset.
Yes.
Okay? Because, for people that really never were introduced to money in their life, you know, the idea of, you know, having a lot of money or, God forbid, even being a millionaire, it's totally foreign to them. They would never even think, gee, I could become wealthy. And if I became wealthy, I could give more to my church, my synagogue. You know, I could give more to educational institutions, things that I care about. I now have the money to support because I have some wealth built up.
Yeah. I think even thinking of it as wealth to me is a good thing. If you just think of it as $100 that you're putting aside every week or something, and if that's all you can do, do that. Because you'd be amazed how well that would build up over 5 years. My goodness.
Well, the silly question, Roberta, that people need to ask themselves, when they say, I can't afford to save, I say, okay, you receive a dollar of wages. Can you take one penny of that dollar, one penny, and put it away in savings and only live on 99 cents?
Yes.
And they look at me like I'm an idiot and say, well, yeah, I could take a penny. I go, okay, you're going to take one penny or 1% of every dollar that you bring in, and you're going to put it in a wealth building account. And then I'm going to knock on their door a couple weeks later and say, how's that one penny going? Could you make it 2 pennies?
Yes, right.
And I nag them until we get to 20 cents out of every dollar.
It may
take years, but I nag.
Many people don't realize that it isn't the big things that keep us from growing our wealth. It's the
little things.
It's like the coffees for $5 instead of, you know, having a...
Don't get me started on that.
Well, I mean, when you walk people through it, when I walked myself through it when I was very young, and I suddenly realized how much money I was spending at Dunkin' Donuts a week.
Sure.
And then by that a month and that a year, I stopped going. I'm sorry, I love Dunkin' Donuts, but I stopped going because that money
I brew my own gourmet coffee every morning.
Right.
And every 2 months, I go and buy, I think it's 3 pounds, and it costs me about $55, and it makes hundreds of cups of coffee. It's a heck of a lot cheaper than Starbucks.
But also, it's even better. I mean, you can get to the point where you actually like the cheaper alternatives better. But I advise anybody who's being skeptical now, sort of maybe glaring at the radio or wherever you're listening,
right.
Go through your own weekly spending. Maybe write it down, maybe for a month, and then look at how much money you're spending that you can't even now. You don't care about whatever it is you spent the money on. Eating out once a week or once a month rather than stopping on the way home every night, even if you're working. It's amazing how easily you can get used to doing a little bit more and then saving that money. And it adds up. It adds up.
Oh, you're exactly right.
This is fun. We should have done this sooner. I've done it all my life, and I really don't get to talk to anybody about it anymore. And there are so many people who need this. So
yes, there are. And let me just give you a very easy exercise that your listeners can do if they wish. Carry around just a little notepad with you for a month. And every time you spend money, you jot it down. Okay, and you have to make sure to include cash money that you might spend at 7-Eleven, checks that you might write to the utility company, or charges on a Visa or a MasterCard. So you got to make sure you put all those down, the utilities, the rent, everything, all the way down to coffee. And then at the end of the month, you want to tally everything up by category, how much coffee, how much rent, how much utilities, how much gas, etc. And you want to take a look and further look at it and say, what is a need? What is a want? Okay? I might need to pay my rent, might need to pay my utility bill, but that, you know, extra large latte for $7.90, that was a darn want. Okay.
Yes.
And you want to take a look and see, especially if you're saying you don't have any money to save at the end of the month, and there's more month left after the end of the money, you may want to see, well, you know, I'm spending X dollars on wants. Maybe I could trim that by 10%.
Yeah.
Get creative.
Yes. And it's the little changes over that you make early in life, which make a huge, I mean, those habits that you form early in life will stick with you. And you'll end up having much more money if those are the right habits. No, I absolutely agree.
Well,
I tell people, everybody, to go through that exercise right of writing down every bit that you spend, because you'd be astonished at where it goes.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Roberta. And that brings us to number 6.
Oh, we're still going through the numbers. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think we forgot it. Number 5 was big.
It was.
Okay. Number 6, set higher goals. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you think that you'll have enough to live in a one bedroom house in retirement in the middle of nowhere. Well, what if you tried to live in a two bedroom house near the water or near the mountains or near a lake? Set higher goals. You know, whether you think you can or you think you can't, it is all in your mind, and it's a self-revealing prophecy. If you say you can't, your mind will believe it, and you won't be able to do it.
That's
if
right.
you say you can, you're giving yourself a fighting chance.
See, now you're right in our wheelhouse. This is the kind of thing we talk about every week. It's exactly true. Visualize.
Yes.
There's some actor who never got anywhere, and I can't remember his name. I think it was Jim Carrey. And he was getting nowhere. And then he started visualizing himself holding $1 million in his hand. Well,
I heard that somewhere before.
Yes.
That does sound familiar. And that brings me to number seven.
Okay, seven. Okay.
Get started now.
That's huge. That is very
okay.
Huge.
The procrastination has to go out the window. Put it in a little box, tape it up, staple it, sit on it, make sure it's, you know, nice and secure, and then throw it out the darn window. You got to start now.
Yes. What's funny about starting now is it isn't hard. The earlier you start, the easier is the slope you've got to go up. Obviously, if you wait until it's 10 years till retirement, you're going to be putting everything into the bank if you hope to have any kind of retirement at all. But if you start when you're in your 20s or your 30s, it's an easy slope, and you can get to the same wonderful place.
You're right. It is easier, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, I went to Weight Watchers a long time ago, and they always said, be very, very careful. Don't go out to dinner with people that get chocolate ice cream sundaes for dessert.
Right.
Because as much willpower as you think you have, after the third dinner, guess what? You're going to have a spoon in your hand during dessert.
Of course.
You need to hang out with the right people.
Yes. Yeah, no, but just in general, thinking about what your own priorities are, if you have priorities that are important to you, if you keep them in mind, again, like Jim Carrey, you're visualizing your future. Keep that before you, and you'll make the right decisions much more easily. So are there any more of these now?
Well, no, there were seven that I wanted to go over.
Okay,
and by the way, that happens to coincide with the seven chapters of my third book, The Mindset of Retirement Success, Seven Winning Strategies to Change Your Life. And yes, people could get it on Amazon just like everything else.
All right, so that's great. You've written another book, too, which I want to hear talk about a little bit. Because
which one? I got four of them in front of me.
I know. A Parent's Guide to Your Child's Retirement.
Yes, my newest one.
You don't think in terms of parents even caring about their children's retirement, unless, you know, I sort of am starting to now about my own. But how can a parent help their child to retire well? They're not even going to be here when the child retires.
No, but I look at it this way. We parents have a wealth of experience to share with our children regarding our own missteps and the blunders we've done in planning for our own life after work. And more often than not, mom and dad lack a blueprint to effectively engage in those needed conversations without them turning into lectures, accusations, or shouting matches, kind of like, you know, the C on the report card in 10th grade.
Yeah,
you don't
right.
want it to degenerate into one of those shouting matches. You want to have a nice, clear, calm conversation. So the idea behind the book was to create 21 thought-provoking conversations for parents to have with their adult children. Okay, and it's not meant to have those 21 conversations on one phone call, and it should never be an interrogation. You know, but you could ask a couple questions during a dinner together or a couple questions a month later on a phone call, you know, and then just, you know, gradually begin to, you know, get through the 21 because they're all interactive and they're all questions that show concern and not pointing a finger.
So your book is about how to do that for your child, which strikes me as a very important thing, because if you have a childhood that you're worried about and you want to help get on a better path, that strikes me as something that you'd want to have a way to do as well as possible.
Oh, absolutely. Roberto, let's say for the sake of example, you were, I don't know, a dentist, and you had a 27-year-old kid working in the city. And you might say something like, you know, I was thinking about something our financial advisor said during our last meeting, and it made me think, what kind of steps have you taken to prepare for your own retirement? Now, that's not accusing your kid of anything. You're just saying, hey, I was meeting with my person. You know, have you thought about this stuff yet? Okay. But you want to frame the question in a way that you share a little bit of what you had to go through and let them know you're there as a resource. These are the kind of questions I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And if you have some money put aside and you think your children are sort of coasting, expecting, you know, they're going to have their turn with your money. Another thing you can be sure to tell them is nothing is certain. That money may well, much of it, be spent just in the care of the parents.
Oh, absolutely. And if that child has thoughts that your assets are going to be their retirement money, best you find that out now.
Oh, most of them do. Between you and me, most of the kids, until they're in their 30s, really do think that's going to help. But usually, in my experience, it doesn't. That money is pretty much eaten up in the care of the parents and in their retirement.
Yeah, so, exactly, or charitable pursuits. But let me let you in on a gem. My friend Richard Watts, who's a lawyer in California, wrote a book called Entitlemania. Entitlemania.
Yeah.
And it's all about kids, whether they're entitled or think they're entitled, to the parents' money.
Yes.
It is a phenomenal read. And he's a lawyer, and he knows about this because he advises wealthy families. And he sees what happens with the kids.
Yes, right.
Great book to read.
That's great. It's called Entitlemania. Is that what you said?
Entitlemania by Richard Watts.
Great. Good. Excellent recommendation.
You'll love it.
I'm thinking now, but what would you most want people to take away from our conversation?
Well, I want them to understand that, you know, if they pursue I'm going to call it a wealthy retirement or an independent retirement, they basically have more resources to share with others. Again, whether that's the church, the synagogue, the community center, the volunteer fire department, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, I know that if I have money, I could write a bigger check and I could help more than if I had less money. Okay.
Right.
And I want to be able to spread that joy, that happiness with my family and my community.
So whatever you're saving for, if it's for your retirement, if you're ever able to save enough, you can also tithe, you can share it, you can give to your favorite charities.
And you can't take it with you.
Well, that's the beauty of it. You don't need to take it with you, more to the point. That's the first thing my mother-in-law, who lived through the Depression, said when she contacted us afterwards. You can do whatever you want, and you don't need money. And I think that's the best thing to look forward to. But now talk about yourself. What's your website?
Okay, well, I am at Steward Partners, STEWARD Partners. But if any of your listeners would like a checklist that I created, it's called So You Think You're Ready to Retire, a checklist of 73 essential steps to take before you cash your last paycheck. If you'd like this checklist, just email me at Roger, R-O-D-G-E-R, dot Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N, at Steward, S-T-E-W-A-R-D, Partners, P-A-R-T-N-E-R-S, .com. And I will send you a PDF copy of this checklist. In the subject line, just put checklist 73, and I will send it to you.
That's great. Thank you so much for that. And that's how we'll be giving you, if you're in the chat room next week, we'll be giving you his contact information. And if you're listening later as a podcast, it'll be in the description of the podcast as well. I'm so sorry we've come to the end of our time.
That's okay. Could I give you my phone number as well?
Sure. Go ahead.
It is 240-800-3450.
Okay, well, we'll also include that. But this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm really glad you could be with us today. This has been fun for me.
Roberta, thank you so much. It was a blast.
We always have fun when we get together. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, we're going back to our original topic. Our guest will be our wonderful friend, Joy Stewart. This is going to be her sixth time with us because she keeps coming up with these wonderful ideas. We're going to be talking about her new and really timely book. It's called Restored to Love, Healing Sexual Abuse Trauma. Her book is about using energy-based treatments to heal the trauma of sexual abuse, but she says that basically these are treatments that can be used to heal just about any kind of trauma. And there's a deeper spiritual aspect to her methods that she's going to expand on for Seek Reality listeners, so please be sure to join us next week. And this week we've been spending time with my personal friend, Roger Friedman. He's talking about something which is really, I think, as important as anything we talk about here, because if you can't get your financial life in order, when are you going to have the time to get your spiritual life in order? The sad fact is most people really never do, and I'm trying to make the steps you would need to take to grow spiritually as easy as possible, because I know your life is busy. But wouldn't it be better if you made a few small changes now, and so you also would have enough money that you wouldn't have to worry as much? Roger is an obsessed individual. He is obsessed with helping people retire well, but he's also a lot of fun. So if you're interested in talking with someone, I know he'd be delighted to talk with you. Just tell him, you know, where you and he met. As you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and for young children, The Fun of Meeting Jesus. My next adult fun book will be out soon now. It's called The Fun of Loving Jesus, Embracing the Christianity that Jesus Taught. I'm excited about this one because it's going to tell you things that you don't know that are so profoundly true about Jesus. It doesn't even matter if you're a Christian or if you have any religion at all, you're going to want to know more about what I think is the most profound thing that's ever happened in human history. It has nothing to do with Christianity. You can order all these books, of course, through bookstores and Amazon.com and so on. The adult books, of course, are available as audiobooks. If you want to talk about any of my books, or if you want to talk about anything at all, you can always contact me through RobertaGrimes.com. I answer every email. Past episodes of Seek Reality are available, of course, on webtalkradio.net and in a lot of other places. And if you ever wonder where we are now, you can always go to RobertaGrimes.com and click the radio tab. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and please make the most of this coming week in our one beautiful reality, knowing that you in particular are a powerful, eternal being, and you, more than anyone in the universe, are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.